First comment. This is the single most useful post I've seen since joining the sub. I just wonder what other posts this person's reading. That's what I'm curious about. The next post I'm gonna read. Love your YouTube videos too, man. You'll have that crack house in no time.
This podcast contains the arguably witty banter of two friends, Skippy and Doodles, that like to debate about investing. The content is intended to be entertaining and for informational purposes only, not investment advice. You should do your own research and consult a financial professional before using any of the information in this podcast, and especially before investing.
Can we start off by talking about rock stars?
It is the weekend. Let's see what I did there.
It's the freaking weekend. So we're going to talk about rock stars. We're going to talk about musicians. We're going to talk about celebrities. And when celebrities start hitting that high note and everybody's into it, ish gets wild. That's all you know. Mm-hmm. Ish gets wild.
Yeah. Okay.
You might be thinking about the New York Knicks. You might be going back in time with the New York Knicks and thinking about Lynn Sanity.
Yeah.
But no. When I say rock star, you think Lynn Sanity. I know you. But that's not what this is about. This is about Jen Sanity. Jen Sanity. Wait. Yeah.
You actually did have a point this show? I'm so shocked.
Of course I do. Every time. Jen Sanity. We talk about Jensen Huang, the CEO of NVIDIA. He found himself in Taiwan this week because the Taiwanese people love him. He goes over there. There's swarms and swarms of individuals talking about GPU this, AI chip that. But then this one, I'm sure, very nice young lady, potentially a doctor, she specifically asked him if he could sign Where the Sun Don't Shine.
You have to clarify. Can you just say it in plain English? Because that sounds really bad.
I try to get poetic up in here. So Jensen Huang goes over to Taiwan. There's an event. I think it's Compex, something like that. I can't remember exactly what it is. But there's this event there. They got booze, et cetera, et cetera. And people are coming over to visit Jensen, ask him questions, talk to him about his future vision of humanity. But this one lady comes up and asks him to sign her chest.
Mm-hmm.
And he turns to the person next to him and goes, is this a good idea? And I'm assuming that person said, heck yeah, because next thing
there's,
you know,
there's video of this. I've only seen the picture.
There's a little video. Yeah.
Not that it really matters. Is he single? Like, is this?
I'm pretty sure Jensen. I'm pretty sure Jensen's married. I mean, those two things are different. Is he single? I'm pretty sure he's married. Was the lady hitting on him? Probably. But so he, just to be very clear, she's wearing like a corset. Or something. I can't quite tell, but it's something like that. And so he signs the outside of that, not directly on the chest. So it's not completely late 1980s musician style, but it's pretty close. For the CEO of an organization that sells AI chips, this is some next level stuff.
Well, no, but this is the first thing that came to my mind was the Happy Gilmore craze. Okay. It looked like a scene from Happy Gilmore. And this is the most amazing thing. He is one of the most incredible dudes. what's happened to his company's profitability and free cash flow in the past six quarters is basically unheard of in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. And it's now a mania. It's a mania.
It is so wild. So wild. But seeing this, I just don't. When I think Jensen Huang, I just don't think people saying, can you please sign my chest? That's all. So there's not much more to say about it, but I had to bring that up because Lynn Sanity has become Jen Sanity.
Just to put a bow on this, originally from Taiwan, moved to the U.S. when he was 9 to live with his uncle in Tacoma, Washington, graduated from Aloha High School in Oregon at 16. And then that's where he gets his first job is at the Denny's restaurant, right? Electrical engineering at Oregon State University, and then goes on to get his master's degree from Stanford. Not too bad.
Yeah. Your standard coming of age story.
The second most valuable company in the world as of today.
Yes, yes, yes. That's Jensen. Now, should we jump into finance?
Yeah, we should.
Okay. Reaching the fishbowl. We're gonna tell all y'all out there, all y'all that are saying my interest rates are high, my student loan, I now have to pay. How do I get this money in order to pay this? And we're going to give you all the solid tips. This is not, you know, we talk about recommendations all the time. That's not what this is. What we're going to talk about today is straight up stop listening to this and go do these things immediately type stuff in order to make money. Do you agree?
Of course I agree. I stumbled across this week and I had to send it to you to see the disgust. So that's basically why we're here. I want to see the disgust in someone ranking the top side hustles and categorizing basically how they made $21,000 on side hustles.
The list of these things, I don't like to say buckwild flower child too often, but about once a year it comes out. The list of these things is wild. And it goes back. We're gonna tell you all about them. So just hold your horses. We're gonna get to that. But you know when we were talking about the value of someone's time, and we were discussing the value of someone's time with regard to putting together your investment philosophy and doing all the investment research. Like, is it worth all this time? Some of the things that were named here, I was like, oh, that's a good buck. Like, that's not a bad buck to make. When you start adding it all up, I'm like, oh, that's a decent amount of money. The amount of time that it takes to do all this stuff. I'm like, you could have gotten your AI certificate like in this amount of time and started doing some prompt engineering.
My guess is this person made like $3 an hour with their ridiculous side hustles to get to a cumulative 21,000.
I want to start off with this one that really, really got me. Okay. So the first like grouping that this person had was on stuff that you probably shouldn't do, but they're going to name them anyway, because why the heck not? And flipping used mattresses stood out to me, but it's not just that. It's exactly what it sounds like. You know, like flipping houses, you buy a house, you flip it over to someone else. This is flipping used mattresses, acquiring used mattresses, selling the aforementioned used mattresses to someone else. What really got me though, is this under the category of flipping used mattresses. It says, there are very few people making money actually doing these things, and they have extensive experience and a network behind them. If I told you, Skippy, I got a way to make you money, but in order to do so, you need extensive experience and a network behind you, guess what it is I'm about to say? Where would flipping used mattresses fit into that list of things?
Well, this is the worst tier. These are the things you should not do. I've got to list all of them for this category. Drop shipping AliExpress, which basically means buying like stuff for pennies on AliExpress and then trying to resell it. I mean, just so much work, so much risk for so little profit. Using artificial intelligence to create art and printing that art on demand. So this is basically like using AI as your artist behind the scenes and becoming a printing shop. Selling wooden pallets. My question here, Diggles, is do you break up the wooden pallets? Like, is there a market for wooden pallets? Do I need an extensive network of people to tell me about wooden pallets? Because I don't know. I don't know much.
How do you think about this? Like, who's the first person to try and sell the wooden pallet?
That's actually very interesting, because I think about not this level stuff, but I think about how to, you know, save a few thousand bucks to buy more of my favorite stock pick or something. I've never thought of these ones.
Are you going to try at least one of these this week?
I'll tell you if I've tried any. I mean, the second tier, which is called low tier, maybe worth doing, is according to this classification, includes dumpster diving for metals. And I thought I was going to say dumpster diving for stocks. I really did. Like, and I do that all the time.
The secret is to go to construction sites where their dumpsters are out in the open and therefore are considered trash. So there's an etiquette to this.
Yeah,
there's an etiquette to this.
In that tier, there's online questionnaires. Again, you could probably make 20 bucks the amount of time you have to spend to make 20 bucks. This guy says that he was making about 30 bucks a month before he gave up. So this wasn't worth his time. Apparently, you can play crypto games. Doesn't even sound appealing to me.
No, and silly crypto games. Silly crypto games is what is the category.
Well, they are silly. I'm sure they're silly.
That's true. That's true.
If we get to the mid-tier category, you can do some focus groups. And this one is near and dear to my heart, although I've never done it. You can flip free items. So have you ever posted something, probably not you, Douglas, have you ever been like, I have this free thing, it's great, I don't want to deal with the hassle, post it on Craigslist, Facebook Marketplace, whatever. Have you ever done that?
No.
So if you do that, I haven't done it in years, but you used to get like 20 responses within 20 seconds of people that this is basically their job. They come get whatever you're giving away. So the trick for me has been, use the same methodology, but post it for $2 or $5 or whatever. Just get all the riffraff. I say that lovingly. All the people where $2 is too much of an expensive price for like some, you know, $1,000 item. I will say that I've seen this. There seems to be a pretty big following with the flipping of free items. Is there anything else in this category that got you excited?
No, my thing I want to talk about is in the next category.
Okay, go for it.
I want to talk about bank churning. This is when you get a bonus for direct depositing. I think we've all probably seen these where it says get your paycheck direct deposited with us and we'll give you X amount after a certain period of time. So this person's saying there's so many banks and institutions you can direct deposit with, just get all the bonuses and keep changing your bank. I like this line. The reason I'm talking about this is because of this line. Change your direct deposit bank often. Either make your human resources girl with a bachelor's degree in psychology earn her paycheck by changing your payroll for you, or deposit your other side hustle income to chase business bank accounts and pay yourself from those.
It is a pretty good line. it's funny. It's funny. That's all.
Wow. Can I just get two other points? I'm done naming the things in here. If you want to name a couple more things, you can. But I'm done naming the things. So I want to get two other points.
The only thing I would say is I just think this is so fascinating. I mean, it's someone who really explored these different easy ways to make money in great detail and kind of said, this is all this stuff that's worth your time. It's just a fascinating. It's a Reddit post, but it's just fascinating.
Yeah. I'm going to read two of the comments on this post, and then I want to go back to the beginning of the post where he spits some wisdom. Two of the comments. First comment. This is the single most useful post I've seen since joining the sub. I just wonder what other posts this person's reading. That's what I'm curious about. The next post I'm going to read. Love your YouTube videos too, man. You'll have that crack house in no time.
Hey, what do we not know about this author? I didn't do deep research here.
I don't know. Okay. But now the wisdom. So at the beginning of the post, I think this is truth. This is truth be told, he says. He goes, focus on a job first. Side hustles are side income for beer money, hobbies, and to make ends meet while you're working on improving your career. If you do not have a career at all, side income won't change much for you.
Brilliant.
Brilliant.
So
but if
true.
You do have a career, go dumpster dive for metals.
Yeah, I wouldn't articulate it like that. But what's the average salary in America, Douglas? Do you know that stat off the top of your head?
58, I believe.
58. If you're out there making 58, maybe earlier in your career, late in the career, you could find $5,000 through side hustles.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
That's a 10% bonus for you. Like
he's saying that. There's one we didn't talk about, which is get paid to sites that'll pay you to do something. And he said he made $5,000 over 3 years. At that point in time, like what you're talking about there, you're making 58 and you turn that 58 into 60. That's solid.
And this is where I would say, hopefully you're living below your means on your 58. You might end up with 5K that you could just invest like and start that nest egg for you. Even the nest egg, but like the safety net that's outside of your nest egg, that's outside of your retirement. That could be a big deal.
All right. Have we sealed the deal on that one? On the dumpster dive?
We sealed the deal. Yeah.
Okay.
So much fun. I want to talk about artificial intelligence.
Tell me more. I've never heard about this.
Christopher Mims wrote a piece that I will guess in the Wall Street Journal. I will guess he's been taking notes on for 6 months.
Yes.
And this is what I've been talking your ear off for 6 months as well. And it's kind of, is the juice worth the squeeze as it comes to AI?
Keep going.
There's one stat that I'll start with that I'm going to let you rant about it. Okay. There's an off-sided figure in arguments that we're in an AI bubble. Calculation from Sequoia, the venture capital firm in Silicon Valley, that claims the industry to date has spent $50 billion on chips from NVIDIA to train AI and only brought in $3 billion worth of revenue. Now, there's a disconnect in timing there, right? You build the thing. This is where you're going back to my analogy of building cars or whatever. You build the car, it's capital intensive, and then you have to wait a little bit to put the car on the lot to actually sell the car. So there's billions coming down the road. But this is what I see. I just go, people are spending so much money, and it seems like table stakes to compete for a Google or a Microsoft or even an Apple or a Meta. But it might just be you don't lose your competition to go elsewhere. I'm not fully convinced how much money you can charge for the additional kit.
So this is where I was interrupting with the, is the juice worth the squeeze? Because it is, the question I'd say is the juice worth the squeeze for the people that are squeezing right now?
Please explain.
Yeah. So there's $50 billion estimated spent on this. If you're one of the people not spending the $50 billion, the juice is going to be worth the squeeze because of some of the other things that we'll get to in this article about how the different technologies in AI are now converging. Like the advantage, according to this, the advantage of the first movers, early technological movers, seems to be that gap seems to be fading. And so if you're able to hang out or like not be in business right now or not be one of the big spenders right now and you can chillax, that's when you relax and chill at the same time. If you can chillax until this is a commodity, all that juice, it was worth somebody else's squeeze.
Yeah, true. You benefit from the let's just say it's a bubble. You benefit from all the investment that went into that. And it costs other people money, not you. We can go as deep into this article as you want. It talks about some of the failures with AI companies that were, you know, superstars just 12 months ago. But the second most interesting point is he kind of claims, and I don't think this is fully backed up by data, but he kind of says, based on what he's aware of, these models are now converging. They're getting very, very similar in their capabilities. And they've effectively been trained on the entire internet. That piece is so fascinating to me. What do you need to make a great model? You need lots of compute power, energy to run your compute power, and great data sets. If that is true, if that point is true, that effectively all the great models now have the compute power to consume the whole internet, then of course the models aren't getting better in a staggeringly fast way. It's kind of like, this is where we are right now, guys.
One of the points that he brings up is around how, to date, improvement has been associated with additional data. And to what you were just saying, it's, let's just, for all intents and purposes, it has all the data. So if you're saying give it more data, it now gets better, and you've given it all the data, then, as he says, there aren't 10 more internets worth of information, right, to give it. But that also just means that the next evolution is going to come not from more data, but better understand it, better models, effectively, is where I would think it would have to come from.
Maybe. I think the next iteration comes from the models. First of all, I'm not an expert in this space. I don't think you are either.
I'm not. No.
I think the models may be near a temporary plateau, according to his take, according to logic that makes sense to me. But it's possible that those models that have now been trained on an incredibly large data set with incredible compute power become things that are consumable and usable on a much larger scale, like maybe on your iPhone independently. Bill Gurley talks about this all the time. And I think that could be incredibly meaningful to the consumer. I still don't know if anyone's paying Apple $20 a month for that, or if that is just table stakes for your next version of your phone.
It'll become table stakes. There's no way it doesn't become table stakes. This is like AOL charging by the minute for using the internet.
Yes. Right?
This will become table stakes. I take, and like you said, we are not experts, so I'm just pontificating and sorificating. Look it up. If I think about the way that human intelligence evolves over the lifetime of a human being, there's one part of the education of a human being that is you give it more and more information. You just go to school every year. People shove info at you. I don't know why you're going to use that info, some of it, right? But they just keep shoving information at you. There's another part of the evolution of human intelligence that is understanding how to engage dynamically with other human beings. There's another part of human intelligence that's taking those pieces of data that you've gotten so far and understanding how to use them. So it's not about the information itself. It's understanding how to use the information, when to apply it, when not to. And I think that that second version in the AI world is how you engage with other AI, which it's under works. I don't know how that's progressing or not. But then the third, and this gets to maybe your iPhone point, is understanding. So now you have all this data, and today, what's available to the consumer with regard to AI, what it is saying, based on how humans have constructed this in the internet, can you take this information and tell me how you would construct whatever I'm giving you based on that data? It's not really thinking, so to speak. It's not like taking info and figuring out how to use it for the most part. It is guessing at what most likely use case, probabilistic use cases are going to be based on what humans have done otherwise, which is a different thing.
Ooh,
fair, not fair.
That gets quickly out of my expertise. When you talk about things like AI talking to other AI, I just get concerned that Google's AI telling the other AI to jump off a bridge when the first AI is depressed. I mean,
yeah.
If Google's AI is involved in this learning together, we're going to learn some dumb things very quickly.
Have your AI call my AI a week of AI, week of AI every weekend.
Our AIs can go have coffee together. It'll be great.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic.
I think, to me, that gets far out, in a far out land where I don't know pretty quickly. I think the thing I loved about this article is it was talking my book a little. It talks about OpenAI's $90 billion valuation and says, great. Well, when they released their most recent version, which we've talked about on the show, and I kind of demoed on the show, they got a 22% jump in one-day mobile subscriptions. But in the past, those spikes have not really turned into customers that have staying power that stick around. So where does the profitability 2 years down the line actually come from for OpenAI, for Microsoft Copilot? I'm just not convinced that it does. And that goes back to me going, these used to be incredible capital-light companies. And now all they do is spend money on data centers. I just don't see how we get out of this with a company like Meta or Google having the same profitability metrics.
I hope that NVIDIA doesn't Pelotonize itself and instead understands where we are. And it's a very Jensen thing. He don't become someone that is signing chess by being an idiot. I think it's a very Jensen thing to be sitting where he's sitting and going, there's so much demand right now, and we are going to make a lot of money, and that money will be profit. And we understand that 2 or 3 years from now, we have some perspective on what the world's going to look like. And we're going to use that perspective to say, we're just banking this. This is not a ride that we're going to be able to ride forever, but we're going to bank tens of billions of dollars to be able to be on the other side healthier.
So I actually have an incredible amount of faith in Jensen and his leadership team's capital allocation. And there's a reason for that. Anyone with a brain in that company has been selling stock from about 450 on. And they just keep going. I mean, you can basically see them going, sorry, our stock's just not worth this much. but they're being smart about it. It's great. And they haven't, to my knowledge, issued a bunch of shares to say, screw these people, like GameStop did this week. But I would argue that was a smart move for GameStop's management in their current situation. But I think he very clearly knows that the expectations of the stock at something like 30 times sales, I didn't look at it this week, are insane and unreasonable and cannot be fulfilled. I think he knows that.
Yeah. And it's not because AI won't be a thing on the other side. It's because this level of price will not remain. And the customers of today might not be able to pay anyway. for the reasons we just discussed. Potentially, I mean, not predicting the future, but like that is most likely things like this just don't sustain at this level.
So I see him leading that company still with very demanding high standards about wanting to be the dominant player in this space a year from now, 3 years from now, on down the line, as he should. But I think he and the entire board look at the stock price right now and just kind of chuckle.
That's the board.
Perfect.
All right, I'm going to bring the excitement down a level.
Okay.
Reaching the fishbowl. And I want to talk about leveraged finance. Hold on to your britches. I know you're getting excited when you hear the words leveraged finance. I want to talk about leveraged finance. William Blair put out this little piece on leveraged finance. It's a summary of Q1 2024. And the title of it is Leveraged Loan Volume in Q1 Eclipses 2023. Oh, man. Wiser words have never been spoken. First, what I want to say is for those of you that are sitting at home being like, what is leveraged finance and why are you yapping about it? Are you familiar with the highway to the danger zone?
Yes, of course I am.
Well, that's leveraged finance. And in a more straightforward language, I'd say this. So organizations have debt. We've been discussing for a hot minute how debt levels in corporations have been increasing, number of zombie companies out there, et cetera. What happens is those companies with debt, they want to get more debt. And so those companies that have a lot of debt or have maybe bad credit, maybe they got like the triple B's going on with regard to when they put out their bonds. When they need to go get money, they look for more. They would look for these quote unquote leverage loans. It can come in a variety of factors. Sometimes it's borrowing to be able to pay your dividend because you might not have the cash on hand. Sometimes it might be trying to get some M&A activity going on. But basically, if you have a lot of debt and you need to turn somewhere to get more debt, there are organizations that specialize in being able to give you debt upon debt upon debt. Refinancing is like another example of you got debt. How do you get more debt? That one might be familiar with folks in the consumer space. So what this is talking about here is we have now gone from last year, 2023 of Q1 to Q1 2024, and we have 170%, according to this, 170% increase in leverage finance volume. We were already saying that debt was too high, and now we're saying that debt upon debt is higher than what debt was when debt was when debt. Could you follow that?
No, it's kind of gibberish, but there's still capital available. Like, yes. Right? There's still people out there offering additional debt. It does tell you something. I'm not sure where you're going with this in terms of the takeaways, but when this flips, it will flip quickly, without a doubt. But right now, the reason for 170% increase is because someone is out there with a sales team saying, yes, go sell some more high yield debt.
Exactly. Here's where I'm going with it. Let me just take you there quickly. Take you to Pleasure Town right quick. Here's where I'm going with it. There was one graph in here that particularly caught my eye, because I'm going to just say what you said again. When these things turn, they often turn quickly. You go back to we were talking about NVIDIA. We're talking about NVIDIA and how are these prices sustainable? What we didn't even mention was how NVIDIA is such a large part, again, of the return of the overall stock market. And now that it's become number two, is a large part of the S&P 500. So things are getting more concentrated. Things might be getting a little riskier, not predicting, but it feels like it's getting a little riskier. In this in particular, people taking out debt upon debt upon debt. Now here's the one chart. There was this chart in here. It's the result of a survey when they asked their customers, in what sectors are you being more or less aggressive with your lending practices than you were 6 months ago? And this is the place and me thinking about, oh, if ish gonna flip real quickly, then where are they trying to put the debt upon the debt upon the debt, which might be the riskier places, and where are they backing off of, which to me says 6 to 12 months from now might be the places I should be paying attention to.
Yeah.
And so I'm gonna go real quick, just like, I'm not going to hit the numbers because it's hard to describe the chart, because I might hit a couple numbers, but I want to go in order from top to bottom of the industries. And we will have this on the Substack, skippydougals.substack.com, on Monday, so you can take a look there. We go from the very top. I'll give the numbers for the very top and the very bottom so you can get a sense for the spectrum. At the very top, it's software and technology. And this is where it's the most aggressive. We're talking probably somewhere like around 40% more aggressive. They're talking about not cautious at all. At the bottom is retail and restaurant, which is almost the flip. It's about a little under 40% cautious. So that's the spectrum. Here's the order. Software, technology, financial services, professional services, aerospace and defense, other industrial, food and beverage, education, energy and energy services, distribution. Now, this is when we start to turn more toward the negative. So that was all the stuff that is a bit more positive. Here's where we start to turn toward the negative. Healthcare, packaging, consumer services, chemicals, media, consumer products, building products, automotive, and retail and restaurant. So again, for me, this is not like a blueprint of any sort, but it's a nice little industry map. Where I go, I want to go take a look at some of these that are sitting at the bottom and maybe what are some players that are worth watching for the next year.
My only hesitation here is I've been involved with sales departments like this and companies like this, and they'll sell to anyone that will sign the paperwork, Dougals. Now, I think your real hypothesis is yes, but their credit team behind the scenes is looking at the financials and saying, yeah, I can underwrite something in software and technology. I can't underwrite anything in retail and restaurant. That's very likely happening. But without knowing the behind the scenes, I just hesitate there just a little bit.
Yeah, I get that. And this is not a blueprint. It's not like, oh, just go buy the ETFs of all of these industries. I don't think it's like that. It's more of taking a gander and seeing if there are any interesting single organizations, again, that are worth monitoring for a little bit. And it might turn into nothing. This might be a whole bunch of nothing burgers. But when I take a look at this and I go, ooh, so they are aggressively putting the debt upon debt in software right now. Okay, that's interesting and makes sense given everything we were just talking about. And they're ignoring your friends over at Solvay.
Mm-hmm. And chemicals. Yeah.
Chemicals. Interesting.
We've reached a part of the show where I read a Charlie Munger quote and everyone rolls their eyes. Are you ready for this?
Yes, I am.
We need like theme music for this. It gets me every time, Dougals. Here's a quote. One of the greatest ways to avoid trouble is to keep it simple. Do you think you need debt upon debt upon debt? Do you think you should be taking out debt to pay your dividend? Or maybe you should have a strong balance sheet. Maybe step one in running a profitable company is making profit. Step two is using that profit to have a strong balance sheet. Step three is making decisions that benefit your company, your team, and your shareholders. And then that's about it. Why does everyone make it so complicated? I mean, I know the answer. It's because there's money to be made in complexity. But it's frustrating to me. It drives me crazy.
I hear you. It's like my friend used to say, why'd you have to go and make things so complicated?
Is that a like pop romance song from like 2002?
I think so.
Oh, is that Avril Lavigne?
That's Avril Lavigne. That's Avril Lavigne. I went Canadian. I went across the border to pull this out.
Hey, listen. I'm hopping on a flight to Canada today. So there we go.
Oh, look at you go. Look at you go.
I'll say hi to Avril. I'm glad you took me straight to the point because the whole leverage on top of leverage piece, it was making my stomach upset over here, Dougals.
I know. It is upsetting. And looking at the growth, I mentioned the dividend portion. That's growing. It's not the largest portion of this, but refinances. But the fact that you're seeing more debt, an increase in the amount of debt that people are taking out upon their debt in order to pay dividends.
Yeah, not so good.
That don't pay dividends.
So I want to close. Yeah, you're going to need. That was not funny, so I'm glad you did the drum solo there. I want to close with one thing. If it's really like a PSA, but if you have any info about this particular advertisement, calling out to our worldwide listeners, I want to know about it. I want to know the creative team, the creative director behind this advertisement. There is, Dougals, for lack of a better word, you can help me out here. So there's a big ad that I've been seeing on the Wall Street Journal mobile site all week long. It says, pay dividends to your taste buds. And then it has, this is with all due respect, it has what I can only describe as like a nerdy looking finance guy. Like, that's just what this guy looks like, and he appears to be eating some peanut butter.
Yes.
Am I doing this fair? And then at the top, there's a logo that says GIF, the merger, and it wants you to click and learn more. So who thought of this idea? Who said, this is how we're going to get more investors? We're going to show someone eating, a nerdy finance guy eating peanut butter on the Wall Street Journal homepage.
Someone eating peanut brittle attracted investors.
No, it did not. No, no. What attracted investors is they made tons of money over 50 plus years. And then they happened to eat peanut brittle and people said, okay.
So what this reminds me of, this is a ridiculous ad. What this reminds me of is there was a period where I was put in charge of our social media spend. Mm-hmm. And there was one day when the design team stormed over to my side of the office and they go, I think someone has hacked our our Facebook. And I was like, why would you say that? And they were look at this. And they like were legitimately like they did not believe that there was a human that could have created what I created. And so they thought it was hacked.
It was you.
It was me. This is what that reminds me of. I'd be sitting at my house like on a Saturday morning coming up with ads. And my wife would look over my shoulder and be like, what is going on? Like, why are you, first of all, why are you creating graphics in PowerPoint?
No, actually, my only hypothesis on what could have happened here is very similar. But somehow the CFO got assigned to create the ads. He's like, everyone likes peanut butter. Put some dude in a tie and glasses eating peanut butter. They're just going to flock to our brilliant investment.
The best part, so when you sent over a screenshot from your phone. Mm-hmm. That's what you sent over, right, to show me this. The best part was there are three things that are on here. Above the ad, it says, Arizona Republicans added a ballot measure that would make unlawfully crossing the southern border a state crime.
Yep.
Then there's the ad. And then at the bottom, it says, needing help to stay in office, India's Modi loses aura of invincibility. And you sent this picture over to me with a what the? And I was like, which one? Like, which which no, part of this?
The reason I didn't crop it down or even bother to explain is I think the ad is so outrageous that you knew which one I was talking about.
No, I did.
I did know. 5 seconds, but gosh.
I knew which one.
So what I might do is I'm probably not going to do this, but I might go look at trading volume for GIF over the last week and see if there's been a spike. We can judge in real time if their ad campaign is working, right? Because
yeah. We wrapping.
We're probably off next week. We'll let you know. We're going to try and record a show from the road. If not, hit skippydougals.com for all things related to the show. And please share the show with a friend.
Thanks, everybody.